This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the BetRivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mike Francesa Podcast. As we while away the days waiting for things to begin to sizzle, which it will next week, as free agency will begin on the 13th. And remember, they can start negotiating officially on the 11th. You know, there could be a word or two spoken beforehand. I mean, you know, somewhere along the way. And, of course, we are moving in on all the college tournaments in the Big East. It'll be interesting because there's a bunch of teams, including St. John's, which have things to play for. And then, of course, we'll get ready on St. Paddy's Day for Selection Sunday. And away we'll go with the NCAA tournament, which always love. I love those first 4 days, wall-to-wall basketball. I do. I've always loved that. I love it. I watch every game. I mean, I know it. You spend 4 days doing it, and I just love it. I do. It's a different tournament after that. After that, it's about the big guys, and it's about who wins the championship. But for that first 4 days, it can be chaos, and that's what makes it fun. All right. We got past the period where you can bring players back, tag them, and there were 9 players brought back. There's a bunch of players that are free agents. Now, that does not mean that they cannot go back to their teams. Does it mean it's unlikely? It can happen. It's clearly not automatic. And you start this with Chris Jones. Rarely do you get players like Chris Jones in free agency. I mean, Chris Jones is a generational player. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is an integral part. He is an enormous part of 3 Super Bowl championships. He's 30 years of age. The Chiefs would have had to pay him over $30 million to bring him back for 1 year. They didn't do it. Now, it doesn't mean they can't make a deal with him. I don't know what's in the Chiefs' heart about this right now. He will be a big loss for them. It's going to be very hard. He's really irreplaceable. Could he make a difference? The team at 30 doesn't want to give him a long-term contract. We know that. And you wonder what team feels, hey, he makes the difference between me winning maybe next year or not. So it's very hard to figure exactly where he's going, but you're dealing with a talent you never see in free agency. A 30-year-old player who is a first ballot Hall of Fame player. That's what he is. And he is there. There's some interesting players there. There's some really good players there. Some of them can go back to their team. There is a bevy of star running backs there, which shows you how hard it is to get a contract as a running back, despite what you may have done in your first go-round with the team. These players, how could you have been more productive than Henry? He's available. Jacobs is available. Austin Eckler is available. Barkley is available. Pollard is available. The much injured but very talented J.K. Dobbins is available. Fascinating to see what happens with these running backs. You know all the places you hear these rumors with Barkley. Hey, everybody wants to get the running back on a discount. You watch. That's a who's who of running backs they will have a hard time getting good contracts. Very good. A couple of guys interest me. Dobbins interests me. If I get him checked out and the doctors tell me he can play next September, and I want him then to tell me he can play next September, if he can, I think he could be a steal. He's not going to expect an enormous contract considering how much he's been hurt. He has been nothing but top shelf when he has played. You know who else is interesting, and I don't think he's going to command an enormous contract, is Pollard. Pollard was put in the wrong job last year. He's not a lead back. He's a change of pace back. He's a come in, carry it three times, dump it to him a couple of times, get him in the passing game, let him break a couple of plays for big yardage. That's who he is. He's a 10-carry, 5-catch guy who can break a game open. Invaluable in that role. Put him back in that role, you got a star. I would be loving Pollard if I'm an NFL team out there, back in that role. He is great in that role. He is a star in that role. They put him in a role last year where they tried to make him a lead back. He's not. So now, put him back in the right role. There aren't any offensive tackles in free agency. There's one. He's going to get a lot of money. Tyron Smith has been injured a lot. We also know how talented he is. He's also never gotten paid. Last year, he had 942 snaps, the most he's had in years. In a free agent market where there's no real bona fide tackles except him, there's some guys who can play both guard and tackle. Like Onwenu can do that. He can play guard. He can play tackle. Play right tackle. There's some guys who are versatile. There's some good interior players there like Robert Hunt. But there's only one legitimate big-time tackle, and that's Smith. And I got to think there's a lot of teams that are going to want to lock him up. Now, is he injury prone? Yes. How does he play when he plays? Great. Last year, he played a lot. He's going to get paid. He's out there. That's big. Where's Kirk Cousins going? I don't know if he's going back to Minnesota. I've heard rumblings about different teams. Some of them make sense. Some of them don't make sense. He's out there. I think Baker Mayfield's going back to Tampa. I don't think he's going anywhere else. I think he wants to go back to Tampa. I think he's going to Tampa. I don't know where Jacoby Brissett is going. He's a really good backup. So is Tyrod Taylor, a really good backup. Good guy to have on your team is a really good backup. And what happens with Russell Wilson? You know, Russell Wilson might have to go somewhere and really, really eat some humble pie where he might have to take no money, take a contract that's full of performance clauses, and start the season where he doesn't have a job. Because I don't think anyone's going to hand him a starting job. He might win one. He might win one in camp, but he might have to go to camp to win one. Denver said they allowed him to go out and make deals. He couldn't make one. They wanted to pass one more parting shot to him on the way out the door. They haven't done enough. They want to hit him one more time. Hey, we tried to let the guy make a deal. He couldn't make a deal. There's wide receivers, but there's so many in the draft. Why would you pay Ridley if you can get wide receivers? I mean, there's wide receivers all over the draft. I would be very leery to pay a wide receiver. And T. Higgins isn't there. I would be very leery to pay a wide receiver. You got Clowney. And you know I've always been a Clowney guy. It's Rent-A-Clowney. Clowney doesn't expect more than a one-year contract. You know this. Here's the thing with Clowney. Make sure you are a good team. Because if you're a bad team, he's going to take games off. So if you're a bad team, don't even look at Clowney. But if you're a team that thinks you're close and you need to add somebody who can wreak havoc on the defensive line, then you can rent Clowney. Rent a Clowney works. It works well. One-year deal, not insane money. He can still get it. He will pay dividends. He will absolutely pay dividends. Now, I know there's so much talk about Barkley and where he's going to go from the Giant perspective. Hey, I think he's going. I don't think he's going to come back to the Giants. And I'll tell you something. I don't think he should come back to the Giants. I think it's time for him to go. I think it's time for him to run away from home. It hasn't been a good home for him. The word I would use to describe his career is frustrating. Not disappointing, frustrating. We know he has ability, but he's not ever been as good as everyone wants to make him out to be, and he's not as tough on the interior for tough yardage as you would like. But he's a terrific player and very explosive. And if you put him in the right offense, which the Giants never did, he could really have a big year. So I don't discount that for a second. If he went to a place like the Texans, that would be really good. You know, I don't know about him going somewhere in the NFC, as I've heard the rumors. I don't know where he's going. We'll find out. I do think he's going, though. I think that's over. I don't think he'll be back. I like guys that, listen, you know if you're signing Tyron Smith, you're paying for him. You know that if you sign Cousins, you're paying for him. You know that if you sign Christian Wilkins, you're paying for him. You know that if you sign certain guys, you're paying for him. I want the guys that maybe you don't know as much about who can really hit a home run, like Van Ginkle. I like Van Ginkle. I'd be after him. He's only 29. I like him. He's versatile. Makes plays. Might not know Van Ginkle as much as you know these other guys. You know what? Van Ginkle makes plays. You want that guy that you can get some value with. You know, you want to deal with, you got to watch age. You got to watch valuation. And then you also want to watch which guys play and which guys don't play, which takes you back to Tyron Smith because, hey, last year, 942 snaps, but a lot of years, he's hurt. Certain guys, you got to make sure. I like Dobbins. I've always been a big Dobbins guy. Dobbins has the ability to be a top back. He's got to get healthy. He's had terrible injuries. Terrible injuries. Oh, there's some guys there that, you know, Huff could be a big player. That one has me scratching my head a little bit because I don't even know we ever got to the bottom of him. Always interesting. Right off the bat, always very interesting starting March 13th. Emails when we come back.
You're listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right, remember, get your emails to the Mike Francesa podcast at gmail.com. Mike Francesa podcast at gmail.com. And remember, for all of your wagering needs, download the new and improved and upgraded, as all these, you know, all these apps are always upgraded. The Bet Rivers app for all of your wagering needs, for promotions, for all kinds of giveaways, for everything. Innovative games, you name it. Here we go. Do you think Tibbs should ever consider playing Josh Hart at point guard? Why would I play Josh Hart at point guard? Just because he can distribute the ball? Listen, don't worry about position designations. There can be a versatility and a fluidness on the floor that allows players to move into different parts of the game when certain personnel are on the floor and allow them to make plays. That's all that's important. Don't worry about designations. Okay. So you've noticed when Hart got all this time and everyone was out of the lineup that he got a lot of rebounds, which he's going to always get, and that he got a bunch of assists. Well, you know what? That's fine. But he's not a point guard. Joel, what do you know about the Walsh-Montana relationship? Well, I haven't thought about the Walsh-Montana relationship probably in about 1,000 years. Despite winning Super Bowls together, Walsh was always looking to replace Montana. No, he wasn't. He was always a little bit, it was a little bit of, oh, is it Walsh or is it Montana? There's always that little bit of that stuff, okay? Now, did Montana like the Steve Young stuff? No. Was Walsh fascinated with Young? Yes. Did Montana get cranky? Yes. Here's what you need to know. Joe Montana is, and it isn't close, is the number one Super Bowl quarterback of all time. His numbers are so much better than everybody else's. He didn't play opponents. He destroyed them for the most part. And he did have a couple of games where he had to pull it out of the fire. The bottom line is he played on a level that no one else has played on. He never lost. And he was very often the reason. So just realize that. That's the bottom line. I'm talking about the Super Bowl. I'm not talking about any other game. I'm not talking about regular season. I'm not talking about anything else. I'm talking about that game. That Super Sunday. Who has been the guy who, when he's been on that field, has been the best player in the Super Bowl? The answer is him. Case closed. Now, Young went in and had his day. Got in the Super Bowl, threw 6 touchdown passes, okay? Proved he could do the job. Had a wonderful career. That was always a little tricky, frosty relationship. Did Walsh like creating that? Probably. Is Caitlin Clark the best college basketball player you've ever watched? Now, I'm going to stop right there. I have never been one to equate the male game to the female game. I am not in any way knocking the female game. I am not knocking the way the ladies play basketball. They play basketball very, very well. And fundamentally very sound. But there's no way for me to compare what somebody does in men's basketball to what somebody does in ladies' basketball. It's just not possible. And if it's a silly comparison. It's apples and oranges. What she has accomplished is extraordinary, is record-breaking, is legendary. She has been compared to Pistol Pete. Now, remember, Pistol Pete was not only a prolific scorer, he was a showman. It was a very different game. So I don't know why we need to even go there. If you want to call her the best, if people want to call her the best player in the history of women's basketball, then that's fine. There's nothing, you know, if that's what they want to do, that's fine. But why do we have to bring men's basketball into it? It has no relationship to it. It's a different sport. That's like saying you're going to equate hockey and figure skating. We're not going to do that. They're both skating. The games are different games. They are played differently. One is played below the rim. One is played above the rim. Often played above the rim. The three-point goal has obviously minimized some of that. Tyler, should picking a tackle at 6 be at play for the Giants, even with the past history of first-round offensive linemen? The Giants don't have to take an offensive lineman on the first round. They do have to improve, and they have to organize their offensive line. But they have more material to work with than, say, the Jets do. The Jets need bodies. The Jets need players. The Jets need to take their premium picks. They need to go into free agency, and you know what? Sign Tyron Smith and sign a good guard. And then go into the draft and grab another tackle. They need those people. They don't have them. The Giants can attack it in a different way. And if they want to trade up and take a quarterback, go ahead. I don't think they'll do that. But if there's been a lot of rumblings about that. Or if they want to draft a wide receiver, go ahead. Just don't screw it up. Because if you draft a wide receiver at 6 and screw it up, it's going to get ugly. Should the Yankees retire A-Rod's number? All right. Let me say this. I don't know how you want to bring the steroid use into the equation, which fouls everything up. Those who do, those who don't. On sheer performance, he did some very, very dramatic and impressive things as a Yankee. I am against, you're talking to the wrong person, because I'm telling you, I would have retired, if I ran the Yankees, I would have retired less than 10 numbers lifetime. Not this. See, what's happened is retiring numbers has become a way to make money because it becomes a promotional event. It becomes a ticket-selling event. It becomes a merchandise-selling event. And that's what it's about. And that's all the team cares about. That's why the Yankees have retired most of their numbers, and one day we'll have a guy wearing 106. Because it's gotten silly, the amount of numbers they've retired. When I was growing up as a Yankee fan, the Yankees had 3 retired numbers. 3. That was it. 3 numbers. Could I have gotten that up to 10? Probably by now. Would I have retired Yogi's number? Absolutely. Would I have retired Whitey's number? Absolutely. Would I have retired, I don't even have to tell you that I would have retired Mickey's number. I don't even think that's an insult to even ask. Would I have retired Mariano's number? The answer is yes. Would I have retired Jeter's number? The answer is yes. Would I have retired a lot of the other numbers? Absolutely not. That's just me. I don't lose sleep over it, but I would not have retired all these numbers that they've retired. I would make it a very, very special thing. Okay? You can't play on the team for 5 years and get your number retired. And you need to make the Hall of Fame to get your number retired. If you're not at least a Hall of Famer, and the early numbers retired by the Yankees, and you can include, obviously, 3, 4, 5, and seven in this, the four immortals, they're not Hall of Famers. They're immortal players. They're among the greatest players that ever stepped on a baseball field. Now, if A-Rod had not dabbled in the things he dabbled in, having the career he had, hitting 700 home runs, 698, and doing the things he did and playing shortstop, he would have, his career had gone a different way. He would have had a number retired wherever he was because he would have been one of the greatest players of all time. But his career became fragmented in a lot of different ways. The move to third base and a lot of the chaos that ensued. How bad do you think it is going to get between the PGA and LIV before something happens? Listen, golf is in a very bad way. And I can't blame these guys who first knock Liv and then turn around and go like Rahm. Or if Rory takes this reported $950 million supposedly he's being offered. How do you ask anybody to turn down a fairy tale amount of money? I mean, that's money that will set his kid, his grandchildren, and his, you know, he can go down five generations and that will take care of five generations with the amount of money we're talking about. How does somebody turn that? You know, it's hard enough when you're on the, you know, second half of your career and somebody offers you $150 million to go to live and your name's Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka. How do you say no? Rory McIlroy's on the back end of his career. He hasn't won a major in 9 years. And somebody's willing to pay him $950 million to go to live? How would you turn that down? And who has a right to tell him, I have a problem with you taking that money? The person saying it would be the first, they would climb over people to get to the money. Anybody would. Nobody's going to turn down $950 million. It's absurd money. It's not even in the real world, that money, that offer. Think about that. What they're offering soccer players, what they're offering golfers, it's just insane. These guys are professionals. They're pros, which means they play the game for money. How do you expect them to turn down that kind of money? But the bigger question and the bigger issue is, how does golf put their sport back together? Let's be honest about it. They sold their soul to the Middle East. It's over. They've sold their soul to that money. It's over. The Saudis and whoever is going to be investing over there, and it's mostly Saudi money, if not all Saudi money, the money is now controlling golf. They are in control of golf. They've bought it. The question is just when do they take complete control of it? And the only thing left to happen, because even when it happens, you know, they're coming, they are here because they have a right of first refusal on any investment going forward with the PGA. They're not going to turn down investments for the PGA. They have more money than they know what to do with. The question is, how does golf reconcile? How does the PGA placate the players who didn't go? And who say, I want the guy who went penalized. Well, the guy who went doesn't want to be penalized. But the guy who's still here says, I haven't been compensated for my loyalty. Now, there has been talk of throwing a couple of billion. Yeah, a couple of B with a billion in a pool for those players. That would probably get it done. Human nature being what it is. But they need to compensate these players in some way so that they are placated and don't feel cheated. Now, you could say that the other players could say, hey, you had an opportunity to go there. I wasn't afraid to go there. You stayed here. You could have gone too. You didn't. It's not my fault you didn't go. That's not how the guy who stayed and was loyal looks at it. He looks at it like, I was loyal and you weren't, and you have to pay for that. Or I have to be compensated for my loyalty. So that's where you are right now with this, and that needs to be in some way fixed. Even if the feelings remain hurt and some people feel compromised, they will get over it. See, once you let the big money in, the big money thinks that it can cure all ills with money. And you know what? They probably can. But golf needs to get put back together. When you turn on the tournament and realize that you're in a transition period for golf anyway, where you don't have Tiger, where you don't have Phil, and all of a sudden you don't have Koepka, Dustin Johnson, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Rahm. You have too many barren tournaments where there's not enough star power playing. It's a big problem. But golf needs, golf, I think, felt, or the PGA felt, hey, we can give our fans what they want and we don't need those players. Nonsense. They need those players, and they need them in the worst way. We'll see you later in the week.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.